Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Couple Speak Relationship Forum. I'm your host, Susan Lager, a psychotherapist and relationship coach at the Couple Center and Couple Speak in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I broadcast live each month on Wednesdays at 8 or 8:30 p.m. Tonight's half-hour show, Move On Without an Apology, a Couple Speak tool to heal your heart, is about the dilemma of healing from emotional injury or violation when the person who hurt you hasn't earned your forgiveness. When there has been no expressed remorse or apology, you do not have to be enslaved by bitterness. You also don't need to bestow cheap forgiveness on that person, letting them off the hook and dishonoring yourself. If you've been ignored or left alone around some hurtful experience, stay with me for this vital episode to learn about how to move on and heal without the benefit of a genuine apology. One technical issue. If you'd like to come on the air with a question or comment, just dial 1 on your phone and you'll be in line to join me on the air. First of all, what is the value of an apology? I think it's important to say that ideally when there's been a violation, there is an apology so that there can be some kind of healing. An acknowledgement of your experience of hurt or violation when there's an apology is extremely validating. So that's probably the most primary thing about an apology. It also helps you to feel that you matter to the other person. When somebody apologizes, you have a sense of feeling like you're important to them and your feelings are important. It shows ownership or responsibility by the offender about the violation, and it releases them from further shame and guilt. Nobody wants to be locked into a perpetual experience of shame or guilt about something that they did that was really hurtful. So it really releases them in a very healing kind of way also. And lastly, an apology, a genuine apology, opens up the possibility for genuine forgiveness and healing, okay? And that's a really important thing, the whole issue of forgiveness. But here's the thing. Forgiveness really is not something that just happens. There are different kinds of forgiveness, and they all entail different things, different circumstances, and not all forgiveness is created equal. So first of all, I wanted to share with you just a brief overview of what forgiveness can look like in its different forms. The first form is genuine forgiveness. And in genuine forgiveness, it's a two-person transaction. So there's an apology by the offender, there's remorse, there's empathy. There's a kind of understanding about, I get what I did to you and how it was hurtful or how it was offensive to you, etc. And most importantly, there is a commitment to amending behaviors. So it's not just words. And a genuine forgiveness and a real apology involves a commitment to doing something different that will be corrective. In genuine forgiveness, the other part of the two-person transaction involves a willingness by the injured party to be open about their hurt. If you've been injured or violated or hurt by somebody in some way, you cannot be silent about it and just brood about it or stew and expect for there to be any kind of corrective experience around it. So that's the first kind, genuine forgiveness, and that's ideal. But again, a two-person transaction. Then there's what we in the field called cheap forgiveness, where the injured person releases the violator from responsibility without the violator doing anything corrective or anything to earn it. We've all seen examples, and this usually makes me throw up when I see it on TV, examples of somebody whose family just got murdered or whose child just got murdered or raped, extreme trauma, extreme violation, and that person comes on and they say, I forgive them. I just forgive them. And meanwhile, that person, there's been no exchange. There's been nothing between the two of them, but they bestow cheap forgiveness. Why do they do it? Cheap forgiveness can help to reduce conflict through either avoidance, minimizing, or denial. And so it kind of takes the uncomfortableness out of the person's head and heart for the moment. But the problem is that there's no interpersonal resolution. The person who comes on TV and says, I forgive the person who murdered my family, has not had any benefit of either an apology or any amending behaviors or anything corrective. The other problem with cheap forgiveness is that it can be a dishonoring of the self. It's a kind of turning away from the self in favor of just reducing conflict. And there's an example that comes to mind that was kind of close to home a while ago. We had a neighbor who was on the receiving end of extreme, outrageous boundary violations by another neighbor. And our neighbor, who we really loved a lot and had a lot of empathy for, couldn't tolerate the notion of living next door to somebody who had done these violations to him. So rather than go to him and go through the grueling work of trying to extract an apology or expecting or hoping for something corrected, he just decided to do cheap forgiveness and he let it go. But the other neighbor hadn't done anything to forgive it. And there are circumstances like that where you might do cheap forgiveness because it's just the easiest way. As long as you understand that you're kind of dishonoring yourself. You're sort of turning against yourself. The third kind of a form of forgiveness is called acceptance, and that's the subject of this episode. Acceptance is an internal process of self-validation, self-soothing, and learning. It's releasing oneself from anger or bitterness and allows people to proceed accepting the limitations of the other. And in acceptance, there can be a choice to stay in the relationship or to let go of the relationship. But the important thing about acceptance is that you do with yourself what ideally would have been done with the other person. So what do you do with yourself in acceptance? You acknowledge to yourself that the behavior wasn't okay. You don't try to convince yourself, oh, it was a big nothing. You don't minimize it. So you internally validate yourself and acknowledge that it wasn't okay. You acknowledge your own hurt and that you were not deserving of what happened to you. So you stay with yourself. I think of that as staying with yourself, holding on to yourself around your hurt. It involves looking at what you need to do to avoid further victimization in the relationship if you continue it. So part of acceptance is saying, I don't want to be a victim. I don't want to enter perpetual victimhood. Is there something that I may have done to facilitate this violation? And I will look at that, and I will try not to do that as I either move forward in this relationship or in any other relationship. And that's what this show is really about. It's an exercise which facilitates acceptance, and it's how you do the internal work when you haven't had the benefit of an apology. So what I have said is that acceptance is an internal process, and I have worked with a lot of clients with a therapeutic tool to help you with acceptance. And it's called the three-letter exercise. And it's a very, very powerful healing tool that anybody can use. And it's all about the internal healing work. And what's the three-letter exercise? Well, number one involves writing a letter to the offender detailing your experience of violation of hurt and why. It's a letter that you do not mail. This is all internal work. But you write as though you were sending it to the person. You can even send it to a bogus address, put a stamp on it, put it in the mail knowing it's not going to get there. But anything that psychologically helps you have the experience of the catharsis that you were deprived of by not having a genuine forgiveness process with the person. So you pour your heart out, essentially, and you let them know all the gory details of the violation. And then you wait a few days, and you write a letter back to yourself from the offender, the letter that you think you would get. And in that letter, you know, the purpose of that, by the way, is an internal validation around the blow-off. So you say to yourself in this letter what you expect the person would say to you, and it might be something like, what are you talking about? I never did that. It probably would be very defensive. I don't know why you're making a mountain out of a molehill. You never said anything to me at the time. I thought it was okay. It would essentially be some form of minimization, denial, or a blow-off of some kind. So you have the experience of that. And then again, you sit with yourself. You sit and let yourself kind of percolate with that for a few days. And then you write a third letter. This is the three-letter exercise. In the third letter, you write back to yourself from the offender the letter you would want or the letter that you feel like you deserve. And in that letter, what you do is you provide a kind of mirroring or validation that you didn't get from the offender live in a transaction with them. And you do a lot of self-honoring and self-soothing. So in that letter, you would say to yourself everything that ideally would happen in the course of an apology, that there would be remorse. You express, you know, so from the offender writing to you, the offender expresses remorse. They feel very sorry. They're contrite. They feel very badly about the way they damaged you. There's also, ideally, some expression of empathy toward you. They can understand the impact on you of their behavior. And ideally, they would say something about what they will do as some form of correction or amendment. But you use the voice of the person that, you know, who offended you, and in that voice, you talk to yourself. And I have used this exercise with a lot of clients, and I can tell you that initially the reaction is often, well, why would I want to do that? I know how I was violated. Why do I want to drag the whole thing out and ramp it up and revisit my experience of hurt? And what I say to people is, trust me, this is a really important kind of internal healing experience. And I don't really explain a lot to them about what it can do, but I let them discover that for themselves. So I don't try to sell it to them. I just encourage them to try it. And I can tell you that when people use this exercise, they are often amazed at how they can release themselves from bitterness, from anger, and from a feeling of victimhood because they have done the internal work, they have acknowledged to themselves, and you know what they needed. They've acknowledged the experience of violation, et cetera, and the apology. So that's really it. It's a very simple thing, and I would recommend that if you've been in a situation where you don't want to do cheap forgiveness, and let's say your offender has either died or they do not have the capacity, maybe they don't have the emotional capacity, or they're just unwilling. They're unwilling to enter into a true forgiveness process with you, that you try this exercise and see what happens, and I think you will be really amazed at the results. Now, before I take any questions or any comments, I would like to take just a short break, and just for a second, and we will then get back to the show, and after which, you know, when we get back, I will take the questions, and we can then review any kind of concerns that people have or any comments that people have. If you want more details about managing relationships with more success, I have written a series of books called the Couple Speak series, and you will find lots of information in my second book called Become Relationship Smart Without a Lifetime of Therapy. It's available as a paperback or an e-back on Amazon. One of the issues that I get to in the book is that if you want to have good relationships, you need to get good at learning how to apologize, because we all do things in relationships that at times are hurtful, whether we do them, usually we don't do them on purpose. Unwittingly, we can hurt people we love. And it's important for you to know the value of an apology and how to do it and how to do it right. So that's something that you will see more of in this book. But there are also a lot of other things in the book about basic concepts about managing your relationships well and what it takes to really be successful and have relationships that feel nourishing to you. So that's that. Now, for anyone just tuning in, again, this is Susan Lager. I'm talking about the issue of moving on and healing without the benefit of a genuine apology. And I'm talking about the concept of acceptance as a form of forgiveness, and one that may be available to you, only available to you if your violator has not expressed remorse. Now, I'm going to take questions now, and we have a question. Let's see. Hello, caller. You're on the air, area code 917.
Yes, hello, Susan. Hi.
Hi,
interesting topic. And certainly something I'm sure most people can relate to, unfortunately. I'm really curious because it seems like so many people are, for whatever reason, are unable to apologize, whether it's just extending the olive branch. Maybe they feel it's a humility thing or it's an ego thing. But I'm really curious, if a person has been mortally wounded and hurt by someone and they never really receive any kind of apology, and the person who has been offended and hurt just tucks it under the rug and says, well, that's who they are, that's the way they are, but I love them anyway, and they continue on with the relationship, nothing ever really gets discussed or really hashed out, what is the likelihood that that relationship will be the same, or can a relationship really fully be repaired without any kind of an apology? Because I'm sure this happens more frequently than not.
Well, it depends on how close you want to be in the relationship. If you're very close and you require acknowledgement and you feel that you need to be validated and heard and seen around the experience of hurt, and you have decided to stay in the relationship and lean into an acceptance frame, it's important that you understand a few things. One is that your idea for the relationship may need to change. It's probably, let's say you decide for whatever reason, like this neighbor, that you want to go on with the relationship, it's important for you to kind of be open to the inevitability that the relationship will not be as close as you had wanted it to be, that if there's no ownership by the other person. And secondly, it's very important for you to look at, what do I need to do in order to not set myself up for further offenses or further violations? And what do I need to do to avoid being victimized in this relationship again? And you may decide, well, I might just have a much more sort of surface relationship with this person because I enjoy them on another level, but I would never expect for them to enter into a close conversation with me. So you change your expectations, and then you decide if it feels like you're settling for too little, or if you decide I can enjoy them on a whole different level and it's okay. But you do not, in acceptance, you don't say, oh, well, that was that. In acceptance, the whole point of the acceptance frame is that you internally acknowledge this was not okay. This will never be okay. And you may decide to continue the relationship because you decide, well, this person is limited. Maybe they're intellectually limited. Maybe they're emotionally limited. And I have another reason why I want to be in the relationship with them. Okay? Saying, oh, it's a big nothing is cheap forgiveness. That's a whole different thing.
Right.
You get the difference?
Interesting. Oh, I do. No, I do. Very
it's a great question because, you know, people wrestle with, well, how can there be any semblance of a meaningful relationship? Sometimes there can if your idea of a meaningful relationship is close conversation and open vulnerability and sharing.
Go ahead.
You might decide, I can't, but you might still, even if you decide, I cannot move on with the relationship, moving into an acceptance frame allows you to let go of it without the same level of bitterness. You say to yourself, what they did to me was not okay. It will never be okay. I know it. They may not know it. They're limited, and I'm going to release myself from a lot of anger and bitterness around it because I know what happened to me, and I've made decisions about how I'm going to protect myself. Okay?
Yeah. I would imagine this process, it sounds like this process would really, really force someone to, not force, but make someone really look much more deeply inside in them, you know, themselves and their feelings and, you know, their behavior as well.
It's your own process, feelings, actually. Yes, exactly.
You have to look at yourself when you do something like this, and I imagine a lot of stuff comes up that one would never think comes up. Am I right?
Yes, it's an internal process of examination. You're not just waving off a violation and saying, oh, well, bygones be bygones. You don't do that. You really look at it, and you hold on to yourself. You acknowledge your hurt. You stay with your hurt. You don't say, oh, it's a big nothing, because that's dishonoring yourself. So it's a very different thing, and yes, you're right. It does involve internal work. Thank you very much,
great.
Caller.
Thank you. Not at all, thank you.
All right, I have another caller here. Let me bring this other caller onto the air. Hello, caller. You're a 772 area code. How are you doing?
Hi, Susan. Very wonderful show. Very
important
show.
Thank you. I'm glad you're in, well, I don't know if enjoy is the right word, appreciating it. Did you have a question
wondering
or a comment?
I was wondering about the three-letter exercise, and I find it interesting that you recommend writing a letter to the person who offended you, but not giving it to them. Why wouldn't you give it to them? I would think that would be the first thing that you would do, would give that person the letter so they can have it.
You talk to the person and you talk about your hurt and your experience of violation when you have someone who you think, firstly, may be open to a genuine forgiveness process, where they would be willing to have the conversation, look at it. When you have hopes for that, you first want to go for the genuine forgiveness option. You don't go for the three-letter exercise as a form of it. Well, you can do it just as an internal exercise first. But if you think that the other person is capable, let's say they've expressed a little bit of remorse or they seem like they're ashamed and they seem open and you've had that kind of relationship with them, then you would enter into the genuine forgiveness process with them where you do reveal your hurt and your violation and you open your heart and ideally they acknowledge to you the shame that they feel, the remorse that they feel, there's an apology, they make amends, etc. So that's, you know, that's a first option. But let's say you have been in a relationship with somebody for a while and you've never seen them apologize for things. It's something that they don't do, but you have some investment in being in the relationship. Sometimes going to that place with them and opening up your heart to somebody who clearly demonstrated defensiveness and closeness, either with you or with someone else, is a way of re-victimizing yourself. It's like people who have been sexually abused being told, well, go to your abuser and talk about your abuse and get an apology. Sometimes when you're going to the wrong person at the wrong time and opening up your heart, all you're doing is opening yourself up for re-victimization, being discounted and minimized again.
Having a face-to-face conversation with that person is a lot different than when they receive a letter and they can read it and reread it and revisit it and that might have a different effect on them than having the conversation with you in person.
Yes. So I would always recommend, if you've had any reason to believe in the relationship, that this is somebody you're close with and you have an investment in being close with, that you always go to them in person first. You look at that option first, unless you have a strong reason to believe that they will blow you off, that they have blown you off before, that they are either limited way.
Yes, but if they blow you off, they can't blow you off when they receive a letter from you and the letter is sitting there and they have an opportunity to read it and reread it. And then maybe they'll be able to feel differently.
Well, they can. When I say blowing you off, what I mean by blowing you off is people can still say, "What are you talking about? You're making a mountain out of a molehill. Why are you so sensitive?" People can always be defensive, whether they have a letter in front of them or whether they have you in front of them talking about your hurt. And what I'm saying is when you have a reason to believe, and this is often from past experience with this person, that they are either incapable or unwilling, then you are faced with a choice. You can either go to them, you can go back to them and talk to them in person, or if you have a very strong reason to believe that they will just minimize you and be defensive, then what I am saying, your other alternative is to use this three-letter exercise and do the internal work. And part of that is making a decision whether you want to be in this relationship with somebody you can't even talk to. You see what I'm saying? By the way,
yes,
you can always use this exercise before, and it would be a very helpful thing, actually, to use this exercise before you go to that person, because you will have practiced the saying what you have experienced that feels hurtful, and you will have anticipated what you imagine they might say that might feel defensive, that might be defensive. You've anticipated it by doing the exercise with yourself first, but then you have written the third letter to yourself practicing what you know you feel you deserve, what you want to feel. It's leaning into appropriate entitlement. That's what it is. So it gives you practice for the face-to-face session if you feel that this other person is capable or willing of entering into a genuine forgiveness process. Do you get what I'm saying?
So well, after you've written the third letter back to yourself, that would validate what happened and give you an apology.
Yes.
How is that going to change anything about the other person? It's all within yourself. It's
exactly.
All within yourself.
It doesn't change the other person. What I'm saying is when the other person is not interested in changing, when the other person is not interested in looking at what they are doing, what you can do is you can work on self-healing by saying to yourself, even though they are not willing to look at this, I know what happened to me. I know it was not okay, and this is what I am going to do to protect myself from any further violation. Sometimes what you decide is I am going to get out of the relationship. Sometimes as a neighbor, you may decide I can't get out of there. I got to have some kind of a relationship, or I want to have some kind of relationship. Sometimes what you decide is I'm going to lower my expectations and I'm going to have a very different kind of relationship.
And lower your expectations.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Susan.
Okay, it's a great question. I understand the dilemma, and it really gets to the question people have about the internal work. But internal work is essential to all kind of healing. Even when you have the benefit of another person that you're dealing with, it's always important for you to acknowledge to yourself, I call it holding on to yourself, for you to acknowledge, you know, whether they will they know it or not or believe it or are open to it or not, I know what happened. I am staying with myself around this. I am going to do what I can to protect myself. That's really important work. And it's a foreign concept. A lot of people, it's a foreign concept. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for your questions. And I think it probably speaks to the questions that a number of people have about this. Oddly enough, over time, I'm going to have to stop. I want to thank you, callers, for calling in. I want to let you know that my next episode will be on Wednesday, February 19th at 8:30 p.m., and it's going to be Eastern Standard Time. I planned it as a half-an-hour show, but I've moved from an hour format to a half-hour format, and it seems to really cut things off very abruptly. Maybe it'll be a 45-minute show. That might be an ideal time frame. But anyway, it will be Wednesday, February 19th at 8:30 Eastern Standard, and the topic will be announced. So stay posted, and I'll keep you in the loop. Take care. Bye.